Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. Hello and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast. I'm here with Fred Schenkelberg, and we're going to talk about what makes a good root cause analysis. Welcome, Fred.
Thanks. Thanks, James. And what do you mean, what makes a good root cause analysis? It's you find the root cause.
Yes, that's true. But is it the right root cause? Right. Did we invest the right resources? Do we invest the right time? Do we document it properly? Those are all things I see that I kind of have some questions about. What can we do better? Maybe the title's not what makes a good root cause analysis, but how to conduct a good root cause analysis to get the true root cause.
Well, and I agree with you, James. It makes a difference. In some situations, people will just jump to the first obvious possible solution and get the equipment up and running again. This has got to be the problem, so I'll fix that. And sometimes that actually works. Yet it might be a complete waste of time because you're back out there the next day, now going after what really is the problem. And that's what you mean, right, is the true root cause, is the underlying initiator of the failure.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. How do we make sure we get that true root cause every time?
Yeah, that's easier said than done.
Absolutely. So with that, instead of talking about what makes a good root cause analysis, what makes a poor root cause analysis? What are some of the common mistakes you see in conducting a root cause analysis?
Well, I think I mentioned the first one, and I see it all the time, is you put three engineers or three technicians in a room together, they're going to come up with three answers, and they'll have three potential solutions for any problem you lay on the table or present to them. And sometimes the one with the loudest voice or more seniority or whatever reason just gets to go do that one. And it's really no investigation at all. It's a little bit of, I've seen this problem before, I know what it is. And without gathering evidence, without understanding, can you replicate the failure again? Can you cause it to turn on and turn off, for example, without any testing to make sure that what you hypothesize is the root cause actually is. And those are the two most common ones, jumping to a solution and not checking, or two common problems, I should say.
Okay, so you mentioned investigate. Now, what is involved in this
investigation? Sure, there's more. In a root cause analysis, there's a handful of different techniques and so on and methodologies out there. I think one of my favorites is called the 8D or 8 disciplines. I don't know, James, have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it, but I'm not too familiar with that one.
Well, my favorite is the 8th step, which is celebrate your success. But a lot of people have shortened it to 7Ds to avoid the pizza party at the end. but it's basically the first step is, well, what is the problem? And once you can you identify what the problem is, or just what are the symptoms? What's presenting it? Well, how do you even know that it is a problem? And then that it of course includes to, plug the leak or stop the damage or quarantine the area. If you're making products that may have damage or faults included in them, those get segregated. So it's kind of the 911 or the emergency response is, oh, we've got a problem. This isn't working. And then contain it as best you can. Keep it safe and contain it. So that's usually the first step. When a team is well trained on root cause analysis, though, is that they're also looking for what are the full range of symptoms. What all has gone wrong here? What are the equipment settings? What are the state of the materials that we're dealing with? What were recent changes done to the equipment? It's sort of like a crime scene at that point, is you want to minimize the damage as much as you can and preserve the fingerprints, so to speak.
So you mentioned crime scene there. Have you seen best practices where, I guess, the investigation team or the first responders, if you will, the maintenance technicians in some cases, have a box where they have a camera, they have measuring tapes, they have indicators, all those various things to treat it actually like a crime scene? Or is that going too far?
No, I wouldn't say it goes too far. I've seen people pull out their phones easily as they come upon it, and it's safe, right? That's really the first concern, is then start taking photos before they touch anything, before they open up anything. And as they open things, take photos. I've seen people go and take oil samples, for example, as before they restart a gear or get a gearbox going, and they notice that it had a leak. Well, one is change the seal, but they were also taking oil samples. And when I asked him about it, he goes, well, it can give us a clue as to what possibly was going wrong that caused this leak. And it was just a guess at that point that the oil sample would give him an information that way. So I would say being conscious of what information to gather. Most of us have smartphones and cameras with us anyway, but having a way to collect other kinds of samples may make sense. Well, I think that's where the idea, though, of the first responder and gathering information is part of just being aware of what information you're going to need later. Because the next step is then to pull together, especially for more important issues that you really do want to find the root cause analysis, do a root cause analysis, which should include just about any kind of failure. But it get the right people together to understand and evaluate what information you have available and then what else you need. And the goal is to identify potential root causes. And that might include a fault tree diagram or a finite element, or not a finite element, a failure modes and effects analysis, or brainstorming, a fishbone diagram, a variety of tools that are pretty common in the quality and reliability world. But then from that is then say, well, here's the most likely ones, but let's do some deliberate experiments to figure out if those really are the causes. Now, sometimes you have a smoking gun, I call it, is, you know, you say a capacitor is blown on a circuit board. That it goes back to one of those issues is that you take a picture of that capacitor, you replace the board, the system comes back up and it's running. But was it really that capacitor's fault? Was it a victim or was it a hero, for example, that, or was it the instigator of the problem? So, yeah, capacitors fail and they can take out your circuit. But sometimes they respond to an overvoltage situation and then they fail. But the voltage had to come from somewhere and that may have what is what caused it. So some analysis on that circuit board, on that capacitor, some replicating the circumstances that led up to that failure. Maybe it was the set of machine settings that caused the voltage spike. Or maybe there was a power interrupt in the circuit somewhere that caused the voltage spike. A lightning strike nearby can take out a capacitor pretty quick. Look at all the possibilities and then narrow it down to the ones that are, to the large extent, the most likely. And then can you duplicate that? Can you prove that that was the exact problem? And at that point, then you're ready to implement a fix, right? So if it's a lightning strike, it might be surge suppressors or some other phenomenon, you know, a more capital intensive fix, which is an investment. So you pretty much need to know that was really the problem. Where if it was an operator changed the setting and caused the spike because of a software error, you want to make sure that you're actually fixing the right problem. So that stage can be pretty involved. Sometimes they're obvious. Sometimes there's so many different ways it could happen. And that's where the team needs to take a breath and say, I think the way you phrased it, James, is we need to solve the right problem, not any problem.
Yeah, and there may be times I found where there's multiple contributing causes that came together. Mm-hmm. And gave you that end result, right? So fixing just one of them may have prevented it, but in reality, there could be two or three things that came together to, you know, cause that issue. So then you have to kind of address almost all three,
right?
Or prioritize which ones you're going to address first.
And it depends. Is it a cascading event where you just have to interrupt the chain, or is it contributors from all three that you just need to make them one or three overall more robust? Or was it any of the three could have caused the problem? So when you start digging into what causes a particular problem, yeah, it can get complex, and it's time to pull out the whiteboards and big pieces of paper and start drawing out the causal chains, writing down and sorting out what experiments you need to run. But then once you get a root cause that's your primary candidate, which is the one you think is it, you're not done yet. Then it's implement it, but then figure out whether you really solve the problem or not, right? You still need to confirm it. You implement the solution, but if you're not already monitoring for that particular failure mechanism, set it up. Run it for some time to confirm that you actually fix the right problem. And then once you have that confirmation, then roll it out to the rest of your system. So you can use that to prevent problems in other areas. And in some cases, it's training, some of it's procurement practices, some it's installation practices, some of it's maintenance practices that become an ever-improving process of maintaining your equipment, because every failure is not just an exercise to get an immediate fix in place. It becomes a way to systemically avoid similar failures in the future. And that's to me, is what a root cause analysis process is all about, is fix the right problem and avoid future similar problems.
So keeping that in mind, a root cause analysis is very similar to a failure modes effect analysis or a reliability center maintenance analysis in some points, where just because you complete it, it doesn't mean it goes on a shelf. It's never looked at again.
That's right.
You need to continue to look at that and make sure we've addressed all issues. And if we see something starting to occur or something that resembles what we saw previously, revisit that. Make sure we actually address the true root cause.
Very true. And one of the things I've seen over the years is that the very same issue, the initiating root cause, say swapping out of a part for a similar part that's a little bit less expensive. It's a classic process, right? Oh, this bearing fits and it's $10 cheaper. Let's use it. Well, there's probably a reason it's $10 cheaper, right?
Yes.
And so a very, very common issue like that is something that an organization will relearn over and over and over again. Now, depending on the turnover of personnel and how often new projects and programs and equipment come into the plant, it may be 10 years before you relearn don't buy cheap bearings, for example. But I've seen it as quick as 5 years in product development teams, where the new edgy, new innovation type stuff gets the best engineers. But the simple everyday work gets left to the junior people right out of school. Well, they don't have the 20 years experience, and they're making the same mistakes that the old timers made 2-3 times already and learned it the hard way. So part of this root cause analysis is not only to revisit it when you see the same symptoms, but is to institute a way to teach the newer people in your group what the organization has learned the hard way. So the root cause analysis should feed forward into training and into institutional learning is one way to phrase it.
A knowledge management system. How do we transfer that knowledge from the experienced people to the junior people?
That's right.
Have you seen any good tools or techniques to do that?
I've seen some really bad ones. One's called, I call it legends and lore, which is basically you take the new guy and you send him around to all the graybeards for a couple of days, and they tell stories, and you might pick up a few things about who knows information about what, and they get to meet all the folks they need to know. But very little of that information actually sticks to the new people coming on board. Another method I've seen is where they record everything. Everything's in the database. And they say, hey, if you have a problem with this circuit board, check the database. And there's 8,000 entries for that database, for that part. Well, which one do you read? Which one's useful? I've seen organizations gather every incident, and it's overwhelming. It's not curated or filtered out as to what's critical. So one of the best methods I've seen was like a quality organization, or maybe the operations engineering or the engineering team will review these root cause analysis and say, hey, you know, this issue that we saw with the swapping out a part without checking its full set of specifications, it's not just bearings, for example, that have problems. It's any time we do that. What's the process we use to make sure that it gets appropriately approved before it gets brought into our spare parts system? And it might be fixing that process so that there's a checks and balances go in place. But then there's also just this collection of those, where I've seen it, was called golden nuggets. It's a one-liner that says, basically, as an example, don't buy cheap parts. You know, it was a marketing guy that came up with this program, and he said, you know, give it a catchy title. There's a story behind it, which you can go into, and it's easy enough to tell to the new people, but all they need to see on a regular basis is maybe quarterly, or when they're getting ready to do an overhaul or do a turnover of a line or whatever, is here's the 20 or so key learnings that we've had as an organization that you need to keep in mind. And so by creating those short lists with the supporting documentation and stories behind them, but it brings it back into consciousness. What happens in organizations over time is they forget. You know, we remember the latest three major disasters, but go further back, we're going to forget the fifth, sixth one down the chain. But by keeping that list to say 20 or 30 issues there alive, it stays fresh. And
absolutely.
So I've seen that as a real good way to do it.
I'm working with an organization now where I did some work with them a couple of years ago, and it's the exact same issue they're having now, that we identified a root cause, we implemented a process change, because that's what it was. It was an approval process. Implemented that, had some significant turnover. All of a sudden, they're back having the same issues. We go look back, it's the exact same problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The approval process wasn't followed that was originally set up because you had turnover and there wasn't a good knowledge management practice in place to convey that approval process and why we do this and how we do it and so on and so forth. So, yeah.
And that's where the power of stories really come in. So those catchy titles helps people remember it, triggers that memory of the story, the onboarding or training, or, you know, a reference like a blog post even within the organization can give you the details, the gory details and the backstory of it. But you have to have a way to keep the tribal knowledge fresh. And that's hard to do.
It is. It's extremely difficult. Knowledge management, you know, not just in root cause analysis, but in maintenance and reliability in general, is a troublesome area. Less and less people are going into skilled trades. It's difficult to pass that knowledge from the experienced guys to the few junior guys that we have coming in to these various trades. So
yeah,
it's a gap I see over and over and over in a lot of organizations across many industries.
Well, it keeps guys like you and I in business then. There's plenty of stuff to go work on.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Unfortunately.
But I don't mind having a problem going to work on an issue. I don't like when I have to go revisit that same issue at the same facility over and over and over.
Yeah.
Let's solve it once. Let's move on to the next thing. Right?
Yeah. Let's go do something more interesting, the new stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
So if there is one thing you could change about how root cause analysis are conducted in general, or maybe the knowledge about them, what would that be?
Oh, good question. Number one piece of advice I've given so many clients and so many people I've worked with is do not send the failed component to the vendor. Do not. It's a waste of time. I'm picking on bearings today. So a bearing fails, don't pull it out and send it back to the bearing manufacturer. It's basically accusing them of making a bad bearing, you know, or a faulty part. Is do the due diligence and root cause analysis. So if you do need to do oil analysis or lubricant analysis, or you need to look at the metals that were used, what types of corrosion you're seeing, send it to a reputable lab that you pay for. Sure, it might cost you, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, but you'll get an answer way quicker and they're working for you. They're going to give you the best possible answer of what were the contributing elements leading to this failure. And that's way closer to finding a root cause. Now, in some cases, you're going to find that it was your design, or that it was the maintenance or the settings or the way you were using the equipment that caused this part to fail. It's not the vendor's fault. Sometimes you're going to find, yeah, it's the vendor's fault. Now you have evidence that you can say, hey, how are we going, and especially if you still want to work with them, is how are we going to solve this? But if you send the part back to the vendor, you're going to get one of five answers. Oh, we've never seen this before. Oh, we saw that last week and we fixed it already, so you should be good now. And on just basically not our fault, man. And or it was your fault, or you did something wrong, or we fixed the process, or oh, sorry to hear that, too bad. You know, I've heard that one too. You know, it's just, and it takes forever. Even with good vendors that have good failure analysis capability, it's not in their best interest to admit that there's a failure.
No, it's not. Although they'll build much more credibility and trust with us or with the customer if they do admit that fault and show us what they're doing to correct it.
That's right. But I find that you can really streamline that process by not sending them the failed parts. Go to a lab. Get a good failure analysis lab that's nearby that you can get a blanket PO with. Just put them on retainer. And when you have a failure and you need a chemical analysis, a metal analysis, you need to cross-section and take a look at some of the details of a system, go to the lab that you know and pay for. It'll save you weeks, if not months, and it'll get you to a root cause, the underlying failure mechanism, much quicker and much more accurately than going to a vendor.
So how does one find a good failure analysis lab? Or is there a chain across North America that you recommend? Or is it small local shops through reputation?
Yeah, it varies by location. You know, I'm fortunate. I'm here near San Jose, California in Silicon Valley. So I could point to like four or five really good labs. One's a really good chemically oriented lab. Another one's more mechanical stuff. Another one's got all the SEM equipment and material characterization equipment. I know of a handful in other places of the world, but I don't know of a chain, for example, that has labs everywhere. I know Boston areas, every one of the industrial or product development hub areas have some capability with failure analysis. Seems like a lot of the old IBM sites have failure analysis labs for electronics in particular near them. Because they used those labs. A lot of those labs got spun off during IBM's downsizing and they went public basically. And those are usually pretty good labs. But in general, yeah, reputation and asking around, doing some searching.
All right, perfect. If there was one more question for you, Fred. If there was a resource you'd recommend for people more interested in root cause analysis, could be your 8D methodology or just root cause analysis in general, what would be that resource?
Yeah, I think if you don't have a systematic way for you and your team to go through root cause analysis just a Google search for 8 disciplines root cause analysis or 8D root cause analysis, we'll find a dozen or so pages that basically outline the steps. And they're pretty self-explanatory. And it takes practice to get your team to avoid jumping to solutions and some of the other steps. So just being versed with the stages will certainly help, but it's going to take somebody internally to help facilitate those and to help the team to follow the process, basically. Beyond that, it's a good understanding of the different types of failure mechanisms that are likely to occur in your plant. So is it mechanical systems or electrical systems or sensor systems or communication systems or whatever it is? What are the basic fundamental failure mechanisms, the chemistry, physics, the stuff that goes wrong? What are those? And so there's seminars and conferences and books full of interesting stuff about how things fail. So that would be the next two references for you. One is the basic process, 8D process is as good as any of them, and then understanding failure mechanisms.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Fred. I want to thank you for your time and effort. Where can people find
more about you at?
Well, my latest project is at the sendoreliability.com, but the same place that we're hosting this podcast, Rooted in Reliability, is the reliability.fm, and I've got a parallel or a sister podcast that just recently has gone over 100 episodes, and it's called Speaking of Reliability, where it's my...
Congratulations. That is a huge milestone to hit 100 episodes.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with that, although the quality of our 100th episode's not all that great, but hopefully our audience will bear with us. But that's it. You can find it easily at reliability.fm, and you'll see we have 4 podcasts as of now in that family and that podcast network. So that's probably the best place.
Excellent. Thank you, Fred, and... look forward to speaking to you again.
All right. Thanks, James. Have a great one.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.